Melissa in the Morning talks with career strategist and workplace expert Julie Bauke. It's Julie on the Job. Now on WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM.
Because we're going to go all night till we see the sunlight.
Typically, I love this Miley Cyrus song. In fact, if you follow me on Instagram, it's the song I play every time the Boston Bruins win a game. We can't stop. We won't stop. It's a great song for a good time. Oh, but the company Christmas party, I don't know if you want to get to that status where Miley Cyrus is talking about we can't stop, we won't stop. We'll party till the sunrise. I don't know if that's really the vibe we're going for this year's company party. But you know what? What do I know? Let's go to Julie Bauke, our career strategist on the show, for the very latest on this. Julie, welcome back. How are you?
Thanks. Yeah, the most important word in the title of what we're talking about is it is actually a work party, which means it's not a friends party where we go out and do things we don't remember the next day, as we've all done at some point in our lives, most of us anyway. But yeah, it's interesting that this poll polled all these companies and said, are you doing a holiday party, a holiday event? Let's just call it a holiday event this year. And 3 out of 4 companies said yes. Now, that's probably not going to look much like the ragers that some companies had in the past, because there's so much liability associated with it. And you ought to take that advice for yourself. It can create a liability in your career if you don't know how to show up, participate, and behave in a way that doesn't make people say, ooh, you know,
I didn't
know
that about you. Right. All of a sudden, yeah. You're like, wait, who's this person? Yeah. I mean, but I have to say, Julie, I I know I am on a very far end of the scale. I mean, I'm the kind of person who goes to, if we have like a company dinner and they serve wine, I don't take it. I'm somebody who I will not drink with my colleagues. And it's not because I don't love my colleagues. Some of them are my best friends. But unless they're at my house and we're doing our own private thing and this is truly just a friend thing and not a company run event or dinner or whatever, I will never drink at one of these events because I don't feel like it's appropriate. And I know, again, I'm on the very far end. I know that a lot of people are going to go, well, that's just crazy, Melissa. Like, why can't I have a glass of wine at dinner if everybody else is drinking? And that's sort of the mentality, Julie, is that if your bosses are coming up to you saying, hey, you can have a drink, it's an open bar or whatever, you kind of feel obligated to do so. So what do you do in that situation if you feel like the culture of your company is to drink, for example?
You know, you can get a drink and just carry it around. Set it down. Oops, I forgot, and set it down. But you can also say, oh, no thanks. I want to make sure I have time to really talk to and connect with my colleagues. Or you don't have to say that. But, you know, I mean, we're at a place, too, where I think it's okay to say, you know, oh, no, thank you, not drinking tonight. And not feel like we have to be peer pressured into it. So what you're doing is you're being really smart, because one of the things we know that we've talked about multiple times on the show is that the line between work and the rest of our lives is gone. Now, back in the day, when there was a very solid line between work and the rest of our lives, people still engaged in all kinds of bad behavior at holiday events. So this makes it even harder, I think, sometimes for people to recognize that what you do at the holiday party, it's not like what you do in Vegas stays in Vegas, because it doesn't. Because first of all, social media and technology make sure that whatever you do or say will get remembered, recorded, you know, et cetera, and it will potentially come back and haunt you when it's time to offer up good projects or good opportunities to work with a great client. And it's easy to say, well, wait a minute, the boss was just as drunk as I was. Well, it's the boss. You know, you can't say just, you know, it's sort of like with your parents, well, everybody else is doing it. No, you have to worry about yourself.
Right. And you don't want to be remembered for show being up. Right. This is not what you want to be remembered for on Monday morning. You'd rather be remembered for sealing a deal Friday afternoon and having that be talked about than being the class clown at the company party. I mean, I always say, Julie, as a joke, I mean, I poke fun at myself. I'm not really a drinker, so I could certainly say that. But I always say to my colleagues, because they know I'm a nut, they know I have insane energy and everything. I always say to them, I tell the news, I don't want to be on it. And that's always,
I always say.
I'm like, I always report the news, but I don't want to become one of my news reports. Like, that's always something I say, and they sort of laugh it off, and then no one ever really asks again. So I think having a mantra, if drinking is something you're worried about, that's always helped me, is having a mantra, especially when I was younger. Like, when I was in my very early 20s and I was a reporter, and man, those parties get out of control. TV news, you want to go to a TV news company party, those get crazy. I mean, hookup, it's insane. That was a mantra I always went to as a young journalist. And I still will prepare mantras depending on what the social situation is, but that always has been helpful to me. What about, Julie, if you go to a company event, for example, we talk about how you should appropriately dress when you're at work. What about going to the company event and what you're wearing, especially if you're a remote worker? What do you suggest for attire?
Yeah. You know, I would say generally, okay, first of all, a lot of these events, I think, are going to be happening during the workday. So it might be lunch. It might be, you know, there are some companies, because they have remote workers, they might send out a gift card. And maybe everybody, you know, cashes in the gift card and everybody gets on a Zoom and wishes each other happy birthday. So you have to figure out what's the event. If it's at a really, really nice restaurant, let's say you've got a local team and it's at a really nice restaurant, you know, take it up a level. Wear something that's neat, pulled together. I think it's nice to put maybe something with sparkles on. Maybe it's even a bag or a hat or a sweater or, you know, I mean, something that says, it's a little bit different. I went to a party at a law firm last week, and the partners all had on a holiday tie. Okay, that's appropriate for their stage, for where they are in their career and what they do. So you have to think about what's appropriate for what I do. And you know, make sure, again, I mean, all these things that you think are basic stuff, but make sure that you look like you actually care about being there. And first of all, I get it. A lot of people do not want to go to the holiday party or event. It's sort of like, you know, lunch with the boss? No thanks. Ooh, no thanks. And so, you know, I think a bigger question too, or another question after what if I don't want to drink, is what if I don't want to go? What if I just don't want to go?
Yeah, is that a bad look if you miss the company party?
You know, we all have, our lives are so busy that we have a finite amount of time. And sometimes we're busy that night or we're busy that day. But if it's during the day and it's a work, you know, it's during work time, you really don't have any excuse. And so show up. We say don't pregame. Do not pregame the company holiday party. And show up, say hello to people, ask them what their holiday plans are or share yours. Or if the boss is there, maybe ask her, what are we, you know, what's next year looking like? Or what do you think is on the horizon for the company next year? I mean, it's okay to ask work-related questions. I don't think you want to get Bob in the corner and, you know, go into details about that project you're working on, because you actually are there to make connections, say thank you, wish people well, turn the page to 2024. So I think unless you've got like a really, really compelling reason not to be there, and there's plenty of them, I think it doesn't hurt you to show up and, you know, have a Sprite or have a club soda and, you know, have some outside chatter with your colleagues. And we all need practice at that. I mean, that, you know, as you and I have talked about, the part of the feedback on Gen Z has been they don't know even how to make eye contact and talk to people. So look at this as an opportunity to practice.
We all love a good company party, right? But you don't want to go too hard. And you also want to know that you're having good quality conversations. It's a big reason why they host these kinds of parties. It's not to expose maybe your not so great side of yourself. It's really so that you can kind of put the work to the side and connect with the people you work with. And Julie Bauke is here, our career strategist. So, Julie, what would be your suggestion, especially for younger workers maybe, or for people who work remotely and they only know their colleagues through a screen, basically? How do you read the room? You're all in person for maybe the first time, or you're in person when you're not typically on a week-to-week basis. How do you read the room, and how do you know if you're coming up with the right topics to discuss?
So you want to stay with topics that are not controversial. I mean, it's not the time to share your political beliefs. It's not the time to complain about your family, your boss, your friends, your life, the pay, how you're having a hard time. There are people, and we've all known them, who overshare. And so I would say go in. You want to be planful. If it's a lunch and it's a 2-hour lunch, and you know some other people who are going, maybe if you're really nervous about it, you pair up with somebody and agree to kind of rescue each other from situations where maybe the conversation is going on too long. This is a great opportunity to connect with people you don't normally connect with. So when you get there, or if it's some kind of lunch and people are flying in from all over the place, the easiest way to connect with people and what we call network is ask them about themselves. So what do you do for the company? What office are you located in? What kind of things are you working on? Exciting things are you working on? What are some of your priorities for next year? Do you have plans for the holidays? Those are all extremely innocuous questions. And I wish I could tell you there was some great way to read the room, but when you're talking to someone, you ask them a question, they answer, you chat a little bit, they ask you a question, you share some pleasantries. It is okay to say, excuse me, I see somebody over there that I wanted to connect with or I wanted to talk to. And so if you've got the ear of the boss, this is not the time to air a list of grievances or hold them hostage. And sometimes we get really nervous and we do that. But if the conversation has gone on for a couple minutes, 2-3 minutes, that's more than enough. You don't want to monopolize anyone's time, and it's time to move on and speak to somebody else. And literally, it's this. I learned a question years ago that what are you working on? What are you excited about? What are going to be your top priorities in 2024? Are you doing anything you're excited about over the holidays? What was the highlight of the year for you? Did you do any fun travel? You have to be ready to ask a few of those questions. This is not a holiday event, is not a time to get a mentor, become BFFs with someone, tell everybody what you really think about them or the company. It's a time to just exchange pleasantries. It might be dull, get it, but it's something that sometimes we have to do to show up and let people see us in person in a positive light. Mm. If you go to the party and you sit in the corner and you're on your phone the whole time, or you're rolling your eyes, or you're talking about, I can't wait to get out of here. How long do I have to stay?
Not your
That's
best
actually
look.
Going in with the wrong attitude. I say that, but I'm like, yeah, I've done it. There's plenty of things we do that we don't want to, but we know it's a good move for our careers. So I think that maybe the final thought is you don't want to be memorable for the wrong reasons.
Exactly. Exactly.
And from a company standpoint, look, don't. I would highly suggest against an open bar.
Yeah.
That's where pictures are taken, videos are made, bad behavior comes out, and people have their cameras out, and you're going to have a very busy HR department the following week.
Yeah, just
avoid
it like the plague.
So as leaders, you have to set the tone, as a leader,
Certainly.
To what's acceptable behavior. And if you pregame and you show up and you are a leader and you are drunk already, wow. I mean, that's really bad form. And again, just as your mama said, just because everyone else is doing it, you have your own career to manage, your own reputation to protect. And so be smart going in. Don't show up on an empty stomach and, pound down a few drinks.
Right,
it's not
exactly.
going to end well for you. It's just
exactly.
not.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's, you know, like we were saying before, Julie, just because it is putting kind of work to the side and it's a little bit more lax, obviously, than your day-to-day work, it doesn't mean that you are not really the same person you are at the desk. That's not what it means. It's not like a different person can show up to that party.
Right.
Because in the end, you don't really want to take that risk. And you never really do know. I know I've had colleagues who unfortunately have literally run in with the law at these kinds of company parties because they went too far and somebody got the wrong. I'll never forget one of my first TV stations that I worked at. Really, really nice guy. Really good guy. Very talented reporter. But got drunk at one of the company events. I was not there. I was working. But my understanding is he got handsy with one of the other people there who he felt was a good friend of his at work. You know, they were both reporters. She filed a sexual harassment claim and he got fired. I mean, he lost his job and I felt horrible for the guy because you could see that he's like, I'm not this person. He's married with kids. He's like, come on. But unfortunately, what does a company do? So it just wasn't a great light. And I just think you got to remember at the end of the day that this is not going to your family Christmas Eve party. This is a company event and you need to treat it as such. That's
yeah. If you get feedback on a regular basis that you're not yourself when you're drinking, either, you know, you're super jolly or, you know, you just show traits that you normally don't have. If you've ever gotten that feedback, then I think you need to follow the I'm not going to drink at the holiday party rule. And you can go out with your buddies later or go out with your friends and do something separate. But yeah, I mean, that's a great warning. And it happens. I mean, we could talk for hours about these kind of stories where bad behavior led to the end of your job with that organization. Mm-hmm. And then remember, people, this follows you around and the world gets smaller and smaller. And
exactly.
So if you're the guy who got handsy at the Christmas party or the holiday party, good luck landing another job.
It's very true. It does haunt you, kind of like the ghost of Christmas past, present, future,
yeah,
all
exactly.
those guys. You don't want that, though. You just want to watch the Christmas Carol. You don't want to become it. Julie Balke,
right.
Great advice. Thank you so much, and we'll talk
You're
again
welcome.
Next week.
We will. Thanks.
Recently, CBS News put out this very interesting report. It says the typical American household has to spend an additional $11,434 a year just to maintain the same standard of living they enjoyed in January of 2021. So what does that mean? It means if you did absolutely nothing changing your habits, let's say you live on a budget like we do in our household, you haven't changed a thing, right? You've been grocery shopping, you fill up your gas tank, maybe you go out for a date night once in a while, you splurge on the grandkids a little bit, fine. But from this time 2 years ago to where we are now, it's costing you to live the same life, essentially, over $11,000 more a year to live that same life. So what does that mean? Well, people are cutting back. People are not spending as much. It not only impacts you, but it impacts our local economy. So what can be done? What can Connecticut lawmakers do to maybe ease some of that financial pain you're feeling? We have Senator Ryan Fazio back on the show to weigh in on the conversation. Hey there, Senator Fazio. How are you?
Good morning, Melissa. Thanks for having me.
Now, I am curious with this report. It says the average American household. When I hear average American household, that means you're factoring in states like Florida, for example, where the cost of living is much cheaper than where we are, things like that. $11,000, if I were to make an educated guess, I would imagine it's a little bit higher here for Connecticut residents for that average.
I'm sure that's true. I mean, Connecticut was already too expensive and it was unaffordable for many residents. And that's why you saw a lot of the migration numbers, the population numbers in Connecticut going in the wrong direction, where you had middle class people, retirees and so on, going to different states. Well, with the inflation of the last 4 years, it's only become more difficult. And listen, some of that, some of those are international trends. Some of those are national trends. To some extent, policymakers can't affect it. And to some extent, national policymakers deserve blame. But Connecticut policymakers do play a role and should take a leadership role in trying to make Connecticut more affordable. And I think that goes along several different dimensions, whether it's energy prices, healthcare prices, the cost of basic goods and labor markets, taxes, and so on. I think there are any number of items where Connecticut policymakers could make a positive difference in making our state more affordable for everybody.
So, Senator Fazio, first of all, let's talk about why things are so expensive. We're, you know, you said it before. So inflation is one of the big drivers for why things cost a lot more money. But inflation does seem like it's cooling a little bit. However, it doesn't feel like prices are declining that much. Do you feel the same way about that?
Well, yeah, and that's the nature of inflation. I mean, there are a lot of people out there bragging that, oh, inflation's back down to 2%. But inflation's a rate of change. So it's the difference between prices going up 7% and 2%. They're still going up. That means prices aren't going down. They're just going up at a slower rate. So anyone bragging that inflation's back down to 2%, well, you know, I want my $15,000 back where inflation reached the highest level since the 1980s, the early 1980s. And I think policymakers deserve blame for that. I mean, the people who put us into extended lockdowns and restrictions much longer than we should have had, people who supported trillions of dollars of deficit spending at the federal level, people who inflated the money supply for much longer and much more than was necessary. And then obviously state lawmakers who imposed a lot of regulations, a lot of taxes, much more than were necessary to serve the public good. And because of that, we have a higher cost of living than we need to. So there's a lot of blame to go around. But then the question is, what do we do about it going forward? I'm not a backwards looking person. I'm a forward looking person. So there's, I think, a lot we can do, and we can get into it, to actually make our state and I think other states more affordable.
We certainly do. I want to also to go into the same thing, which is what is forward thinking? What are some solutions to the problem? And we have Senator Ryan Fazio here talking about how expensive it is to live in today's world. It is actually costing on average Americans over $11,000 a year more than what it was to live the exact same life just 2 years ago in January of 2021. And just from an educated guess, I would imagine that Connecticut residents are paying a little bit more than the $11,000 average that we're talking about. Now, Senator Fazio, before we dive into more solutions, you know, I will hear from people who say, yeah, but the governor made one of the biggest tax cuts in this past legislative session. I mean, does that at least make any kind of a difference or not good enough?
Listen, I would say I'm for anything that moves in the right direction. And any tax cut in Connecticut is a revelation. I mean, think about it. There were major, major tax increases in this state in 2009, in 2011, in 2015, and in 2019 when the, you know, the current governor, the current legislature, or many of the current legislators were already in office. So the 2023 tax cut kind of just offsets the 2019 tax increase in inflation-adjusted dollars, and certainly doesn't compensate for all those tax increases from 2009 to 2015. So, yes, it's welcome. I'm very happy that we do have tax relief. We have tax relief because we had spending restraint in the 2017 bipartisan budget and onwards. But there's far more we can do. You know, I have a tax plan that I think would reduce income taxes by $1,000 for the average family going forward through reforms, through spending restraint, and other things. And, you know, God knows on the local level, we need reforms to ensure that property taxes can be lower or limited. They're, I think, the second or third highest in Connecticut of any state in the country. And that's cash out the door, even for retirees who don't have high incomes. So there's far more we need to do on the tax front.
A CBS News report is showing that the average American is spending over $11,000 per year more to live the same lifestyle they were living 2 years ago around this time. And so what could we be doing here in Connecticut? What can lawmakers do to make it a little more affordable for us to live comfortably in this state? We've got Senator Ryan Fazio here. He was just about to dive into some of his tax plan proposals for the state, including reforms. And I'm curious what those reforms are, Senator Fazio, and what would be sacrificed in order to make them happen.
Well, listen, you make a good point that, you know, any elected official is telling you that there's only solutions and that there's no trade-offs is not giving you the full story. But I do think that there are enough tax deductions, tax credits, and special carve-outs in the tax codes to select industries, politically favored industries, that if you rolled some of those back, and then you also limited spending growth, that you could finance a $1,000 per family middle class tax cut, especially focused on income tax relief. So basically, you'd look at maybe about $1 billion of special tax deductions and carve-outs for select industries. For instance, and obviously I'm a little bit right of center, but you know, there's a more progressive think tank called Connecticut Voices for Children that identified $800 million of special tax deductions for special industries that we could roll back, for example, in order to finance a middle-class income tax cut. But then things like limiting the amount of debt finance spending, bonded debt in the state, just limiting the growth of spending generally, if you take all those things together, you know, you could find the $1 billion necessary to do a tax cut that equates to about $1,000 of middle-class income tax relief. That'll bring more people to the state. That'll expand the tax base. That'll make it more affordable for the average family to live, work, and make a life here. So that's something we can do and would build upon the successes of last year's budget.
So I'm curious, Senator Fazio, as one of the Republican senators for Connecticut, what has the Democratic Party said to some? Because I know the Republican Party has really pushed for more breaks, more financial breaks for Connecticut taxpayers. What has been their response?
Listen, it depends on the person you ask. I bet if you ask the governor, he would be more favorable to what I just said. But there's certainly more progressive members of the legislature who will dig in their heels on the fact that we can provide more tax relief, and actually we need to lift the spending caps that were imposed in 2017 so the government can spend more money. They think there's a lot of needs that require the government to spend more and act more. I disagree with that. I think that overspending has made Connecticut's economy in many cases a basket case over the last generation, has made, you know, people of, you know, you're in my generation, you know, totally, you know, we basically haven't seen an economic boom for most of our lifetimes in Connecticut. And hopefully, you know, the decline is at least reversing here. But, you know, because of the overspending, because of the debt in Connecticut, it's become unaffordable. It's, you know, the second highest tax state in the nation because of the overspending. I think there's more than enough money sent to Hartford by hardworking people in this state already that the policymakers in Connecticut should be able to figure out what they need to do with all the revenues that they already have. So that's my take, you know, but that would be the argument from some of my friends and colleagues on the other side of the aisle.
Senator Fazio, I want to thank you so much for coming on to weigh in on this conversation and also offer some solutions that I know are being discussed by lawmakers and I'm sure will come up in the next legislative session for 2024 now.
Anytime. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we appreciate it. And certainly this is something that I would imagine is going to be discussed coming up in the next few months. So Senator Fazio, I know we'll be back on the show to discuss more of this as time unfolds here on WICC.
Party hop, mistletoe hung where you can see every couple tries to stop.
Well, we certainly don't want you to go to any parties or even walk home this afternoon and feel like, gee, my nose is itchy or I'm sneezing a lot. And what's the difference? Why am I feeling this way? Well, you could be reacting to your new addition to the house, which is your Christmas tree. So can you get sick from a Christmas tree? It seems like you can. We've got Dr. Philip Hemmers to explain. Good morning, Dr. Hemmers. Welcome back to the show. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I'm glad to have you here. And again, Dr. Hemmers is an allergy specialist for Hartford HealthCare St. Vincent's Medical Center. So you can get sick from your Christmas tree, huh, Dr. Hemmers?
That's correct. There is a phenomenon called Christmas tree syndrome, where our allergy symptoms are triggered by either an artificial or a live Christmas tree.
Okay, so I think that's interesting because, sure, the live Christmas tree I get, you know, we have allergy season, people are allergic to pollen or different trees out there, so on and so forth. But an artificial tree, really?
So first I'm going to address the live tree. It's actually not the pollen so much. Pollen is released by trees in the spring. In the winter, when they're brought in, the trees aren't pollinating, but they're covered in things like dust. They're sprayed with chemicals before they're brought in, and they grow mold as soon as they're brought in the house if it's not already on there. So the live tree is going to cause symptoms triggered by all those factors. And some of them could be the same for the artificial tree. They're stored over the winter. They're in a basement or an attic. They're going to be collecting dust as well.
Okay, that makes sense. So for the artificial tree, we're talking more of the dust if we don't. I mean, but that seems like that's a simple fix, though, Dr. Hemmers. Can you just take it outside and shake it out?
100%. There are some good solutions. Cleaning the tree when you take it out of storage, storing it in an airtight container, those things will make a very big difference and help to alleviate or prevent symptoms entirely.
So, again, we have Dr. Hemmers here, an allergy specialist, and there is such a thing as Christmas tree syndrome. So with the live trees, though, we're talking more like mold allergies, correct?
Right. Mold is a big trigger for Christmas tree syndrome. The molds, when they're outside, they'll be the trees when they're outside will be growing mold. And then when you bring the tree inside in a nice, warm, potentially humid environment, that mold will start to multiply. And the longer you have the tree in the house, the more mold there'll be. So one of the ways to lessen your Christmas tree syndrome symptoms is to keep the tree in the house less. After the holiday, remove the tree, get rid of it.
Interesting. Now, Dr. Hemmers, my understanding is you co-authored a Christmas tree syndrome study recently.
Yes, we did a study to track how high those mold levels go once you brought the tree in the house. We would check the levels once a day, and over the course of a few weeks, the numbers went from a normal range, which is the same as, you know, outdoor mold, nothing that would cause a problem, and it would grow to be 5 or 10, even 20 times higher over the course of the month.
Wow. So who's at risk of getting Christmas tree syndrome?
Allergies are a very common problem. One-third to one-half of our population is going to have some allergies. Those people who have allergies to begin with are at higher risk. Someone with a dust mite allergy, with the mold allergy, they're going to be the most hard hit.
Okay. And how severe can it get? Like, how do you know you're having an allergic reaction to the tree?
So if you're feeling well prior to bringing the tree, and then you start to have coughing, sneezing, runny nose, itchy, watery eyes, your typical hay fever symptoms, that's a very good sign. Of course, this time of year, there's coughs and colds and the flu as well. So you may take a few days to distinguish what's going on. And it could get quite severe. Asthma symptoms are a sign of progression where you're not just having sneezing and runny nose, but you could be having chest tightness and wheezing.
Yikes. So, I mean, what would be, that doesn't sound fun at all. So what would be your treatment option for that? I mean, I would think the obvious one is get rid of the tree.
Yeah, I mean, the best thing is prevention. Rather than taking antihistamines or inhalers, you want to try to prevent symptoms. So I said you should wash the artificial tree. You should wash the live tree, too, before you bring it in, because that's going to help get rid of some of the mold and any kind of, like, pine sol spray they have on it. Putting an air purifier in the room with the tree is a good idea, something that has both a HEPA and a charcoal filter that will clean the air. That's a great idea. And as you just said, getting rid of the tree. If that's what's causing the problem, remove it.
I'm a little worried, Dr. Hemmers, because when you said wash the tree,
Don't worry.
Here's what I'm worried about is when you say wash the tree, I'm just picturing, you know, there's going to be some wise guys out there that are going to put the tree on top of their car on the way home, and they're just going to go through the car wash. You know it. You know that's going
to
happen.
I would love to see that. Would love it.
Right? I mean, it would wreck the tree, but at least you know you washed it thoroughly, I guess. I don't know if the car wash people will like that, but wash the tree, you know? Just put a nice hose to it when you get home. Don't go through the car wash with it. Is there anything else people should be looking at or looking? I mean, one of the things that I know is an option is to do allergy testing, right? That's a pretty simple option if people want to even know if they could be at risk of this.
Right. You could help determine what your risk is by doing an allergy test first. Find out if you're allergic to dust and mold. And then if you're in that situation and you have to determine, is it a cough? Is it a cold? Is it the flu? Is it allergies? Is it my tree? A simple skin test that takes 15 or 20 minutes can give you that answer.
And what's amazing is I recently got an allergy test done, Dr. Hemmers, and right. I think it tested like 72 or 73 different allergies I could have possibly had. It was pretty extraordinary. I was like, how did you do that from 7 or 8 pricks or whatever? It was crazy. I couldn't believe it, or whatever they do on your back. I don't know. I was like, this is wild.
It's amazing. You can find out so much information in such a short time, and you can actually see the allergy, because when you put the drop of dust mite on your arm or on your back, you have a reaction that you can see, which is really remarkable.
Yeah, it's amazing. So if people are interested in doing an allergy test, do you just go to like your primary care physician or something to order that, or what should they do?
No, the best thing to do is to see an allergy specialist, someone trained in not only doing the test, which is important, but in interpreting the test.
Okay, so that's something you can request. Certainly from Dr. Philip Hemmers, an allergy specialist with Hartford HealthCare St. Vincent's Medical Center. For more information, you can go to hartfordhealthcare.org. Thank you for the heads up, Dr. Hemmers. Was not aware that there was such a thing as Christmas tree syndrome, and now I know. So thank you.
Super. Have a great holiday.
Thank you. You too. Always thought when you hear Christmas tree syndrome, it just meant you got to buy a bunch of Christmas trees for your home. Like, I thought my brother suffered from that. You know, that guy's got to buy like 4 or 5 trees per year. It's crazy. He needs a tree in every room. It's outrageous. But that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about being allergic to your Christmas tree, and not just the live ones, artificial ones as well. For more information, hartfordhealthcare.org. Caring for an aging parent or relative can be a really difficult responsibility, and many times family members take on this critical role of being a caregiver at the expense of their own financial, physical, and mental well-being. Connecticut Home Care Agency Assisted Living Services in Cheshire and Westport is looking after these special family caregivers by helping them enroll in a state program that pays a weekly stipend and assigns them a dedicated nurse to ensure that they are not only providing proper support to their elderly family member, but also taking care of themselves. So to join us and talk more about this is our registered nurse with Assisted Living Services. We welcome to the show Julie Nuzzolillo. Hey, Julie, how are you?
Good, Melissa. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much. First of all, could you talk, Julie, about just some warning signs that may indicate that an elderly person may need help of a caregiver at home?
Oh, absolutely. So age-related decline can happen quickly, such as forgetfulness, confusion. There's neglect of physical appearance or even basic hygiene, neglect of medical needs. There is trouble performing routine tasks or chores, personality changes, and inability to handle finances and pay bills.
Okay. Now, I know Assisted Living Services, we've had them on the show several times. It's a credentialed provider of a state program that actually trains family members to care for an elderly relative in their own home. Could you talk more about this if people aren't familiar?
Yeah, the Adult Family Living Foster Care Program, or simply called AFL, was created in 2013 by the Connecticut Department of Social Services to help the growing senior population age safely in their own homes. And even though it's been around for a decade, many Connecticut families still don't know about it. The program does pay a tax-free stipend to the family caregiver, which can be over $500 a week, depending on the complexity of care required by the senior. So Assisted Living Services provides a licensed nurse, like myself, and I'm also the director of the program, to visit each foster caregiver and senior client regularly in their home, just to assess and review their needs, and most importantly, to ensure that the foster family caregivers are getting the ongoing training, education, and support they need. Now, keep in mind, Assisted Living Services, we are not a skilled medical care, home care agency, we are non-skilled, which means that even though we are nurses that are going out to visit the client, we do not provide hands-on care.
Okay, but it sounds like you can offer a lot of just advice and also guidance to families, for example, with this AFL, this Adult Family Living Foster Caregiver Program. How do people qualify to be a caregiver in this program?
So to qualify, the elderly client needs to be on Medicaid and be a Connecticut resident. The foster caregiver can be family or non-family members that reside in the home, but must be at least 18 years old and be able to follow written and verbal instructions and report changes in the senior's health. Unfortunately, spouses do not qualify,
really?
Although they are, they hold us to that vow till death do us part.
Oh, right, that whole thing where you're supposed to take care of them. Got it. But, I have to say, though, Julie, that is interesting because even though we commit to that, couldn't we say the same thing about when you decide to have, like, children? Don't they, like, owe it back to you to take care of you as you get older? Or on the other side of things, there are parents who have children who have disabilities, for example. So I know of families who, you know, they've got kids in their 60s who still need the support of their parents. I'm surprised that spouses wouldn't get in on this. And I don't want to say get in on it like it's a, like you're getting duped. But I'm surprised because even though, yes, you do commit to obviously taking care of them forever, doesn't mean that you don't go through the mental, physical, and financial trauma that any other family
absolutely.
Member would. You know what I mean? Like, that's interesting.
Yeah. Well, they are looking to change things. I know that it is in the works with legislation to hopefully change it to where the spouse can be paid to take care for their husband or their wife. I mean, many times some families don't even have children. It's just the two of them.
And I don't know. And I think obviously I could totally see where people would abuse that. Right. I mean, I could totally see where people would abuse like, oh, like I've got to collect on this. My husband's driving me nuts. You know, I can see that. I could totally see that. But like, I think in if I were in a situation where, you know, if me or my husband, if one of us were really needing the help at home and they were taking it on full time, just the emotional damage of that, because like we're soulmates, and I would just think watching, you know, like I think of if God forbid, knock on wood, it doesn't happen, but like watching, you know, your spouse go through dementia or Alzheimer's. I mean, that it just takes not only a financial toll, but such an emotional and mental toll on a spouse.
It does. And not only a spouse, but also the family caregiver. You know, we recommend that they engage in regular activities that they enjoy or find a new interest. Just taking short breaks and getting out of the house throughout the day, even for 10 minutes, helps.
But the family caregiver will get stipends, but like the spouse won't.
Absolutely.
I want to get that spouse on. We got to work on that.
Yeah, we will.
Spouse included. I don't know.
Melissa and I will take care of that. We'll make sure it happens.
Right? We'll do that in world peace. We'll work on all of it. And
that's right.
We've got Julie here, who is a registered nurse, and she is with assisted living. And assisted living services has come on the show several times to talk about the work that they do to really help families to be caregivers at home for their loved ones. And we're talking about this AFL program, Adult Family Living Foster Caregiver Program. And I'm curious, you know, Julie, if you could talk to us. I know I kind of got you off track there for a second, but I was really curious about that spouse stuff. Walk us through, if you don't mind, like a typical visit to a family enrolled in the AFL program. What does that look like?
Right. So when we go in to do the visit, we're looking to see if the client needs additional help with activities of daily living, such as personal care, transfers, meals, and we're also monitoring the household for safety. We also make it a priority to see how the family caregiver is doing. It is a 24/7 job, so we want to make sure that their overall well-being is being kept. And one of the main goals of my visit is to provide physical and emotional support for the entire family, whether that means encouraging them to get a home health aid, which assisted living services does offer. We do have private duty aides that can come in and provide respite. And even as much as exploring an external passion that the caregiver loves and directing them to a professional therapist if they need additional counseling. We also check when we look at safety if the beds are not, let's say the person is trying to wander or exit seek, we would provide them with technology to make their jobs a little easier. And we at Assisted Living Services, we have our sister company called Assisted Living Technologies, and we help families that are in the caregiver program to explore those assisted living technologies to make their jobs easier. And besides the home visits, I'm always available to the foster family caregiver by phone or email to help them remain empowered, energized, and enthusiastic about their new position. And all of these benefits are through the AFL program to which the caregivers and the clients are entitled to.
We are talking to Julie Nuzzolillo today, who is a registered nurse with Assisted Living Services. And we were talking about this kind of unique program. It's known as the AFL program, standing for Adult Family Living Foster Caregiver Program. And it's a stipend. It's a way to give back to those who are taking care of an elderly loved one at home. But I was curious, Julie, about maybe some other strategies you recommend for people to make sure they're practicing self-care as they're going through this difficult challenge of not only caring for somebody else who's struggling, but also to take care of themselves mentally, physically, financially. What can people do? What are some strategies you suggest when it comes to self-care?
Well, first and foremost, the caregiver needs to give themselves credit for doing the best that they can in one of the toughest jobs ever. I mean, taking care of your parent or your sister, your brother that's declining is one of the toughest jobs anyone can have. One of the things we definitely recommend is that the caregiver engage in regular activities that they enjoy or find a new interest. Take short breaks, getting out of the house throughout the day, even if it's for 10 minutes, helps as does visiting with friends. Taking care of themselves physically by not skipping their own doctor's appointments and exercising, eating well and getting proper sleep, and getting up 15 minutes earlier and using the time for just journaling, meditating, or stretching, and also watching for signs of depression and not delaying in getting professional help.
So certainly there are things that we can be doing just to, I think one of the biggest that you just mentioned, Julie, is to not be so hard on yourself. We were just talking earlier in the show about being our toughest critics and how we don't feel deserving, we don't feel worthy, and yet there is somebody relying heavily on you to get them through each and every day and to get through these obstacles. So to give yourself credit, I would think, and I'm not putting words in your mouth, but if you needed to seek professional help and invest in that, that might be a good idea as well.
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. If you start seeing that you may be having some depression, definitely pick up the phone and call your doctor and ask for a referral to go see a professional, not delaying in getting that help. It's extremely important. The caregiver having their own mental health and physical health is the most important thing there is. You got to take care of yourself before you can take care of other people.
Mm-hmm. It's like that whole thing with the getting on the plane and when the mask drops from the overhead bin. Put it on yourself before you put it on your kids, because if you take care of them but not yourself, unfortunately, both of you could perish in that situation. So it's really important that you are stable and in a good frame of mind and taking care of yourself to give that loved one the best care you could possibly give. If people want more information, Julie, where do you suggest they go?
They can visit our website at www.assistedlivingct.com. for home care needs, and they can also visit www.assistedlivingtechnologies.com for senior device equipment. Or you know what? Simply give us a call. Call us at 203-634-8668 and ask to speak to the Adult Family Living Program, and we'll be more than happy to help you and guide you in the right process through the whole thing. We are on the journey with you. We're definitely not going to leave you abandoned. We're here to support the family, support the client that's declining, and we care about our families and the caregivers. So we're here. Pick up the phone. Give us a call.
Mm-hmm. And again, with that number, it's 203-634-8668 or online at assistedlivingct.com. Julie Nozzolillo, I want to thank you, first of all, for the work that you do as a registered nurse with Assisted Living Services. And thank you for taking the time to share all these resources here on WICC. We appreciate it.
My pleasure, Melissa. And thank you so much for having me on the air to share this information with so many people that are definitely in need of it. So thank you. Thank you very much. And you have a great day.
You're very welcome. You too. Julie Nozzolillo, again, a registered nurse with Assisted Living Services. And their number is 203-634-8668 or go online to assistedlivingct.com.